Mr. Walton, did you make contact with aliens? Were you taken to another planet, to a mothership? How do they communicate with... Can you tell me what they look like? Can you tell me how many of them there were? Were you given food?
But the teachers are alive. They're not books. They are the very living essences of nature itself.
What a strange person.
Unbelievably powerful supercomputer that's running our reality, and we don't have a clue as to how to operate it.
So when maybe you or somebody else creates an AGI system, and you get to ask her one question, what would that question be?
What's outside the simulation?
Say in your mind, say to yourself, I am more than my physical body. Because I am more than physical matter, I can perceive that which is greater than the physical world.
So I believe Mr. Our guest tonight I believe Mr. Henry Reed is here with us. We got him on the phone and it sounds so much better. I've kind of got to the point where I might just stay with the phones like the old Art Bell style because everything sounds better that way. All right, so what I gathered from our previous conversation, and I appreciate your patience, by the way, is that a lot of people have dreams, and what you're teaching and what Edgar Cayce is teaching is that we should work with our dreams because there's obviously something there that we need to work out instead of, you know, just thinking about it or whatever. And you were kind of talking about how you were going over some scenarios, which we didn't really get to hear. But I guess my question is what is your theory or Edgar Cayce's theory on, is it us in the dream talking to us? Is it God? Is it the higher self? Or what do you call it?
Well, that's an interesting question. There seems to be, it wasn't just Edgar Cayce, Carl Jung, the psychiatrist who's had a major influence on dream work. And so on, that we, quote-unquote, or you, quote-unquote, are much bigger than we realize, our minds, and so it's the larger consciousness that we are aware of. When you look out and see things and understand things, who's talking to you? Nobody's talking to you. You're having awarenesses and you're having understandings. And it's like this. Think about your dreaming self your dream, when you're in this other state of consciousness, you're not limited to, you know, the things that happen during the day, because you have all the life history available to you in the mind. I mean, it's not just Casey and Carl Jung and others and the physicists now talking about this consciousness aspect. It's not limited, you know, to a certain time and space. And one of the analogies I often use is think about parents sitting on a porch and they're watching their kid out in the front yard playing. The parents on the porch is our dreaming self, our ancient selves, and the consciousness that's available to us in the dream state. And the real kid is our conscious self during the day that only has what, you know, daylight brain activity to go by. Okay. And the parents on the porch watch the kid play with the ball. And the ball goes out into the street, and the kid runs out into the street after the ball. And the parents on the back, they go, "Oh, my God," and reacting to it. And the kid hears that and says, "What?" And that's kind of like what's going on in dreams all the time, is that your more greater self, or whatever you want to call it, infinite, immemorial self, immortal self, or what have you, soul, watching you during the day and responding and reacting to it. And in the morning or whatever, the dreams that you're remembering is you're kind of like the kid who turns his head hearing something about the parents made some kind of a noise as he was running out into the street. That's basically what's going on in dreams.
So your dreams are kind of reacting to what you're doing and trying to help you through symbolism, and it's trying to teach you something.
Right, exactly.
So
exactly.
Then we don't really need to. So when I asked that question in the beginning, like how do we talk to ourselves through our dreams? It's not so much really, is it more listening to what the dream is trying to say than actually trying to conversate with the dream as we're having the dream?
Well, I'm not sure I understood what you just said, but.
Well, people believe when they become lucid.
What we did with people was this: if you record your dreams.
Uh-huh.
And the first was, just look at the words in your dream. And what do the words in your dream make you think about? Why don't you just write some sentences about yourself using the words in your dream and see what that brings up about you? What ideas do you have about yourself? Now, what do you want to do about that? Think of something that you could do today that would take action on what you're learning about yourself from your dream, or that you think you're learning, so your dream self can respond to you. That's how we started. Was the first exercise was to look at words in your dream, make up sentences about yourself that use those words, think about, just come up with whatever you think maybe your dream might be talking about. And if you were going to try to say, "Hey, I'm listening, I'm paying attention," what might you do today to tell your dreams you were paying attention? Even if, you know, you don't have to be right. What you have to be is sincere.
Yeah, I got you. I understand that.
It's a process. It's a process.
Uh-huh.
It's not like all of a sudden some magic, and I can give you a formula, and you know what your dream means.
Yeah, that's why.
It's the process of interacting with this other aspect of yourself, this other dimension of yourself, over a period of time. And you start realizing that, you know, that there's a communication going on. What the people would start feeling is that I didn't know what my dream meant. But I thought, well, it could be something like this. So I did such and such. And the next day, I had a dream with so-and-so. And, you know, it's funny because I can just tell it's responding to what I was doing.
Yeah.
And you feel a connection. And that's what it was all about.
So, all right. So I get that part. So do you believe that there is a collective unconscious, a place that where we're all kind of connected, not just the individual connected? Do you believe in that?
Well, I don't know. There's two words I'm having trouble with, the word believe and the word connected.
Okay. Well, let me see if I can rephrase this question. Carl Jung talked about the collective unconscious, right? You know what that is.
Yeah, I could say yeah, I suppose.
Okay.
But the people who've had the experience of the what they call the non-duality, the enlightenment or what have you,
right,
the saying is that I am that we all feel is different people. It's all really the same person.
Yeah, so if we do see a symbol in the dream, what I was trying to get around to asking you is, you know, there's a lot of books and stuff you can buy about dream symbolism and you to interpret your dreams. Now, I tend to have a theory that symbols mean different things for different people, but I could be wrong, right? So say you see a bear in your dream and I see a bear in my dream, could mean two different things for both of us, right? It doesn't have to mean the same thing, or can it mean the same thing across the board?
I agree with you on that. That's certainly true. You find that over time, the symbolism is not... One of the things another one of my colleagues showed that if trying to train counselors to not be so shy about dreams, and the counselors get all hung up about, they won't know what to say about the symbolism. I say, well, forget the symbolism. Just look at how the person is acting in the dream. How is the person responding to what's happening in the dream? That's where the action is for interpretation. Forget about the symbolism. And not that there isn't such a thing, but people get too hung up on that. You know? And I would say the payoff is not in the symbolism, but the payoff is in the dreamer's behavior. Is he running away scared or is he standing up, you know, or what?
Right, I get what you're saying.
That's where we find it's where all the action is.
So,
hobby about studying symbolism and so on, and it can be very fascinating, and it can be a great mind trip, but it doesn't really have that much to do with observing how you're behaving and making adjustments.
Okay.
And
so,
that's where the action is.
Can we actually have dreams that answer other people's questions?
Well, again, that's the way. It's interesting that the way that you've phrased the question. I don't know if you maybe had been reading about some of the research that we were doing,
mm-hmm.
showing that people can get help from other people's dreams.
Right.
This was being inspired by children. I was at a camp, and I had a special tent for people to go and have special dreams. And we would go through some exercises and meditations and so on. People in the camp would know that this person was down there to have a special dream. And sometimes they would tell me their dreams, and I would realize they were tuning in to what was going on. So we tried to see if you could do this on purpose. And now that was back in 1975. And now, decades later, now we're being able to give the instructions for anybody to do this online. You don't even have to be an expert. What you just need is a group of people who are sincerely interested in trying to help somebody else. And they'll be... try to experiment with their dreams. And what happens is you get a whole bunch of dreams. You get, say, maybe 10 people dreaming for somebody. And so then all the 10 people, they get all the dreams. And they're all over the place.
Yeah, they are.
And so you ask the people to look for commonalities, and they start exploring what are some of the commonalities in the dreams. I can give you a quick example if you'd like.
Yeah, please.
And one person had a dream where they were driving to work, and they came to a stoplight, stopped. The light turned green and they started to go. And as they started to go, out of the corner of the eye, they saw this other car coming running through the red light. And so they had to put on the brakes to avoid a collision. And that was one dream. Another person had a dream. They were watching television and a commercial came on. And they went into the kitchen and to get some coffee, and they went and got some half and half in the refrigerator and started to pour the half and half into their coffee and realized it had gone sour just in the nick of time. And so they threw that away and they poured some, went and got some fresh cream and they poured that in their coffee and they went back into the living room with their TV show was coming back on. Those were two dreams. Now, they had no symbols in common. I just told you two very, very different dreams. But what they do have in common, and people can see this, they don't have to be experts. You don't have to be a psychologist to see what's going on in those two dreams that are in common. Well, first of all, the two people were involved in a routine activity. One was just driving to work, stop lights, go lights, going or watching television commercials, pour coffee, and so on. And then each of them experienced something unexpected happened. And they happened to notice it in time to take corrective action. And, you know, and we find that people can do that kind of work. They don't have to be psychologists. They don't have to know about symbolism.
Well, you know what?
What kind of thing was routine? And it turned out this person that they were dreaming for was worrying about their investments. They had a question about their investments.
Yeah, see, that's fascinating to me, actually.
Unwanted thing that was about to happen that would have really messed them up if they hadn't made a change. And so the drama, people were picking up on the drama using the language from their own experience.
Well,
this is what then starts getting into symbolism and so on, and it led us to say, when I look at you and I try to understand you, I understand you using the vocabulary of my own experience. I understand you. It's the only way I can understand you, but because of two things that I've experienced, and I relate to that. And that is kind of like what's going on in dreams. And you have a group of people in showing, they're definitely tuning in. You know, it's interesting, you know, and you can do a study to show, you know, in terms of ESP and parapsychology, that there was clearly ESP in the dreams. But, you know, the interesting thing in all the years that I've done this, and we do big crowds and they get into groups, they form groups, and they promise the dreams for somebody. They go home, they come back the next day, they get back in the group, they discuss the dreams and so on. And then I have the people who were dreamed for to come out in front of the audience and stand up in front of everybody to talk for a few minutes about what was it like to be dreamed for by these strangers, you know, and so on. And, you know, the interesting thing is nobody ever talks about ESP and psychic. What they talk about is feeling close, feeling understood, feeling connected, and stuff like that. I thought that that was really interesting, is that, you know, in spite of all of the, you know, the big razzmatazz we make about psychic abilities and so on, when people experience it in kind of a very natural kind of a thing, it's not a big deal. It's just something to be really pleased and grateful for and hug one another and so on. And so I've been trying to find ways to use this in ways that where people maybe being strangers or estranged from one another could have a chance to dream for one another, where all these opinions are totally irrelevant, and come to feeling close and bonded and so on. My wife, who did one here locally, we're out in a farm community where it's very fundamentalist Christians. And in terms of beliefs and so on, don't have any of this kind of belief. But going and doing this process, they found it really helpful, and they didn't have to change their beliefs about anything, because it's not about believing anything. There's some kind of uncanny, when the people share their dreams and start talking about them, an uncanny feeling of deep empathy that's going on there. There's something. They say that we were somehow, you know, you use the word connected at night, that we were in communication, that something happened, we're feeling so close to this person's issue. I think that for a lot of people, it's too bad it's so hard to get together, because this experience, this for people who have never really had much experience with dreams, is a real eye-opener. It just shows, you know, this dreams are a very natural thing, and there's a lot that we can do with them, but all these theories and so on, it just gets in the way, you know. It makes it too difficult.
So can we ask to have a certain type of dream? Like, once we tap into this, can we ask our dream world to answer a question for us?
Yes, we can. We've done studies with that. Again, what is required is, what we find has worked, is that if you, what you do, we take you through a process, maybe a journaling process, where you clarify what it is you're asking for, why are you asking for it, why will it make a difference in your life, why does it really matter, and what is it you can do yourself to promote this, that you're serious about it, and you're willing to contribute blah, 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 to understanding it or what have you, and maybe not expect a one-night stand. I mean, people report lots and lots of examples of getting their questions answered.
So
sometimes it takes maybe a process.
Yeah, you're saying, like, a lot of people look for answers in one dream, and we need to maybe develop a better relationship and be patient and learn and just keep working with it, instead of thinking we're going to get all the answers in one night. Right.
Exactly.
So
it's a relationship. It's like driving down the road, and the dreams are trying to keep you on your side of the road, and you veer off this way and that, and they keep trying to get you on this side of the road. It's a process. And One of the things, you go through this intensive process with a journal, or maybe you get to be in a dream circle, something that you get an experience with a dream that tells you that it's worth your time.
Ah, okay.
Then maybe you could find a way to have the time. Because there's certain things involved, like, you know, like recording the dream in the morning. And then you have to think about it. When I work with people who've been through, say, you might say the education, where they've taken the class and they've gone through the 4-week experiment, or they've been in therapy for a while or something, so that they've had some experience with dreams to know that it's worth figuring out a way to spend time with them. They work out a program where, for example, if you could say, wake up in the middle of the night and you would write down a couple of the words, people would say, for example, I remember this dream, and but the time I got to the bathroom, it was gone and I couldn't remember it. Exactly. And I can't spend all night writing down the thing. But if you would write down a word or two, repeat the dream to yourself and write down a word or two, and then you go to the bathroom, you do okay in the morning, those two words would bring back the dream recall. And it's little things like that to make it not so cumbersome, because I know when I was in the thick of it, you know, I would spend an hour every day writing out all that dream stuff and then going through the exercises to interpret the dream to find out what I might do that day to bring about the next dream. It was quite a time-consuming experience in training. It's like going to college, you know, and you can't go to college and work full-time and do all that stuff, but you learn some stuff that is later, you have to make it kind of a short and easy kind of a thing. So you make a titling, like, for example, making a title for your dream and maybe not writing it all out at first and getting off to work and thinking about it and other things you could do to make it not so impounding on your time. People are so busy. That's the thing that I find. People are so busy that asking them to spend a half an hour a day, even to get them to meditate, which is probably more important than working with their dreams. The dreams don't count on them to remember them, or else we'd be extinct, you know, because people don't remember their dreams. But you try to find people to spend 20 minutes a day, twice a day meditating, and that's impossible. So dreams, it's a challenge to invest the time. And I try to take the example of the best the person can do is they happen to remember the dream, and if they're lucky, when they're driving to work, they could think about the dream for a couple of minutes. So I say, okay, well, I'll give you some dream lessons when that's all you can ever do is think about the dream for a couple of minutes while you're driving to work.
Yeah.
What could you do? Well, one thing is that you could have conversations with the symbols in your dream. That's a really good thing to do. So if you dreamt about you went to town and you bought yourself a popsicle stick, well, why don't you have a dialogue with a popsicle and talk to, hey, popsicle, what's it like to be a popsicle? Well, I'm kind of stiff and cold. What's it like to be you? Well, I'm driving to work, and I'd really like to have a popsicle. I love popsicles. What's your favorite flavor of me, you know, and so on and so on. And even though it doesn't seem like anything is happening when you do that, by empathizing with these dream symbols and engaging your imagination, you're actually allowing some cross-border energies to flow back and forth. And you're also showing some interest. You're showing some interest in your dreams. But again, I say doing something about a dream. Like, can we just say to the kids, wear something with the same color that you had in your dream, and your dreaming self will notice that you're paying attention and it will start a conversation with you.
Oh, that's cool. So it kind of, once it notices that you're paying attention, then it increases, so to speak.
It increases, exactly. Yeah, and one of the things that people find, see, is that they don't do anything with their dreams and they just record them. The majority of the dreams, I say 80% of dreams, have negative emotions.
Yeah.
Because they're corrective dreams. They're trying to be corrective. Move you back, get back in your lanes. You're too close to the yellow. You're too close to the curb. Get back in your lane. And so most dreams are negative in feeling. That's just the statistics. But when a person starts working with their dreams and doing things because of a dream, dialoguing with the dream characters and items and so on, painting maybe and drawing them sometimes to honor them, the dreams start changing and it becomes more of a 50-50 deal, and a lot more positive and surprising things happen. That's just statistics.
Right. So, okay. So knowing that, then what is it, once we start to have this conversation and it increases, is it just trying to keep us on the path, let's say, why we came here to begin with? What are we working towards? Or what are some common things that you think that we're working towards that our dreams are trying to tell us overall?
Well, the person that studied that the most was Carl Jung.
Right.
You know, you heard of him, the psychiatrist Carl Jung?
Yeah, my favorite book is The Red Book, actually, yes.
And, but all that stuff, in case he was saying it to me, Carl Jung, he made more of a definitive study over time with people of what they were trying to do. And the dreams are trying to bring out more of, say, like you're an acorn growing into an oak tree, and you're only growing one of your branches. And the dreams are trying to get you to grow more of your branches. Dreams seem to be, the purpose of dreams seem to get you to be more of yourself.
To be more of yourself. That's really well said. So I'm looking at your website here, and this is,
please don't. They're so out of date. I've been sick for a couple of years and haven't been able to touch them.
Well, no, but you know, the cool thing about it is I've been talking about the intuition for a long time. A month ago, I was even asking questions on the show like, how can I tell the difference between paranoia and intuition, right? And I'm looking at your website here, and it's all about getting in touch with your intuitive abilities. And I think that's fascinating because that's kind of a thing that gives us power. I believe if we learn to listen to our intuition, we can have a much better life. And what you're telling me is a way to get that going. A really good way is to learn to
do it intuitively.
Do you? Every single time?
Well, how else would you do it?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what you were saying over the laughter.
I said you dream intuitively.
Yeah, but I've had some really weird dreams that make absolutely no sense. It almost feels like my brain's just trying to get rid of some junk. Is it every single time, you think?
What are you asking? I'm not sure I understand your question. All right.
Let me rephrase the question. Let me ask it a different way. If you have a dream, like if you have several dreams, is there a slight chance that some of the dreams have nothing to do with your intuition? It's just your brain trying to get rid of some stuff.
Well, I suppose it could happen, you know, when but even a sneeze has a purpose, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right. So,
I don't know that you can come up with some kind of grammar of dreams where dreams are always saying this or that.
Well, what happened to my dream the other night is I had an emotion that I haven't felt since I was a child. 30-something years, I hadn't felt that emotion, right?
Right.
So I know that dream is, at least I believe, that dream is something I should write down and continue to work with, things like that. But sometimes I just have dreams that have just such, they feel like they mean absolutely nothing sometimes. I could be wrong. Maybe all dreams mean something. I wonder what Edgar Cayce thought about that.
I don't know that he spoke to that issue or not. That's there's a lot of philosophical background that we'd have to go through to even discuss that question.
Yeah. Okay.
We
don't have to do all that.
So many judgments and so on.
A waste of time, basically.
And something like that.
Let's see.
My personal feeling is that that there is no dream is frivolous, but at the same time, you don't have to deal with all of it either. It wasn't designed that way.
Gotcha.
You deal with it a lot better in your sleep state. But
so
you'll find that you're going to spend that some dreams are going to command more attention than others, for sure.
Right. So
and you're going to find that you have a limited attention span.
Right. Yeah.
And you're going to find that you have a certain rate of growth or which you're willing to make changes.
Yes.
But if nothing else, you know, it keeps you guessing.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just something to think about, you know, and then when you're driving to work.
Right. Well, that's the show, folks. No, seriously, I'm just playing. But you wrote a book, Awakening Your Psychic Powers, which is cool. We like to talk about that on the show, you know. Honestly, I believe some people are psychic. I believe we kind of all are, but do you consider learning to speak with your dreams one of the first things that you can do to awaken your psychic powers? Is it a tool for you to awaken your psychic powers? You wrote a book about awakening your psychic powers.
I was thinking about it. That's all. I was just trying to think about it. There's so many stereotypes and so on about psychic powers. I'm embarrassed by that book.
Really?
I wrote that before I had any experiences. I was all written right out of just what things I had read.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been the biggest selling of all of them.
Oh, well, you know what? But, we all do it. Right?
If you read enough examples and so on, you realize that you're being guided by your psychic powers lots of times and not even aware of it.
Hmm.
And there's I'm kind of lost exactly what it is, what question we're discussing.
Well, you know what? It's totally fine. You already said that you're embarrassed about the book, so we can move on from it. But, you know, if you think about that, what you just said, being embarrassed about the book, I'm embarrassed about the shows that I did in 2018. I've learned something totally different than I did back then. That was 3 years ago. So I understand where you're coming from on that. Maybe you started happening
all I could do is repeat, you know, in good words, what I had read, because I hadn't had any experiences. And then when that dream circle and did some of those things, then I realized, well, here was a way for people to discover that this thing could happen, and it was in a good way. You know, people were helped. It wasn't just for showing off and stuff like that.
Oh, sure.
I think about the Sorcerer's Apprentice and Mickey Mouse.
Right.
So anyway, I asked myself, how come I never tried to develop my abilities?
That's a good question.
I see it in dreams. I've read about it, but it's never occurred to me to try to develop my intuitive abilities. Why not? And I realized that I started thinking about it, that I had some fears. I had some concerns. It took me back to when I was a little kid smoking cigarettes. And I realized that as a little kid, I was in a very emotional environment with my parents and my grandparents and stuff going on, emotions all over the place that I didn't understand. And I'd sneak a cigarette and go outside and smoke a cigarette down by the creek, and I think to try to block off all that stuff.
Right, yeah.
And so then I thought, well, now I'm 30-some years old. I've been in therapy a long time. I've done therapy. I've been a therapist. I shouldn't be afraid of people's feelings. Maybe it would be all right for me to develop my intuitive abilities. Where would I start? And then I just started thinking about experiences that I had in counseling. And I realized that listening was one of the things. And I just started developing some exercises, like having a person count backwards from 100 to 1 while you just listen and go on to a daydream, and then just share the daydream you had. And often stuff in your daydream relates to what that person was thinking about while they were counting. And so I started then really more working with and talking to a lot of people about whenever they had had a psychic experience and how they felt about that. And they said it was kind of creepy in some ways. And so I've been exploring what is it about the psychic ability that's kind of threatening and so on, and invasions and boundaries and whatnot. It's kind of interesting. It's an interesting subject.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Charles Tart, he's a retired psychologist about my age. We're both from California. He did a study, and he's done a lot of studies on the subject of people's fear of ESP. And one of the first ones that got him started, he started to suspect it. He went around to college students and he told them, you know, how psychologists lie all the time, that they had developed a new psychedelic. And if you take it, you would be able to know and feel everybody's feelings and thoughts within 15 feet. Would you like to try it?
I don't know if I want to try that, but yeah.
No, you couldn't get students to try it. So he was surprised because, you know, if you ask them if they wanted to try the Lay's buds, they'd try that. So interviewing them why they didn't want to try it, it started to all come out about these fears of influence, of contamination, of invasion, of not being able to distinguish my thoughts from your thoughts. Who will I know? Am I with my boundaries?
That's
how will I know if I'm acting out my own feelings and not some, all kinds of stuff. Well, the truth is all that stuff is going on, actually is going on. You can demonstrate it in the lab. People pick up on one another's feelings and thoughts all the time and not aware of it, and it affects them. Fortunately, you know, we're thick enough that it doesn't matter that much. It takes a big dream or something to break through. But you can get, like, here, just to give you a bizarre experiment. People think that they're coming in to be an experiment, and they can sit and ask to just sit here in this room and wait. So now they're in a room waiting to be an experiment, and they're sitting in a room with other people who are waiting to be an experiment. And then they have to write down some that they were thinking about and so on, and find that they're picking up on one another's thoughts without knowing it. And it happens all the time. Now today, of course, you have the big thing is empaths. You probably heard about empaths.
Yeah, everybody talks about that
now. Pick up on people's feelings and how could they block, you know, a lot of boundaries are falling, and this is one of the things, you know, as the person says, gosh, if I were psychic, I'd be bombarded by people's feelings all the time. And now people start complaining of that. But, you know, it's interesting that they never consider, well, what feelings of others do they pick up on? Because they don't pick up on every feeling. They pick up on certain feelings. You know, and I think that what we learned in kindergarten, it takes one to know one. So I would suspect, you know, at least in our research with folks, that when empaths are picking up on other people's feelings, they're picking up on feelings that they have themselves, but that they push away, you know, but they don't pick up on that person's feelings of how much they enjoyed breakfast.
Right.
You know, that they pick up on that person's feeling about paranoia or what have you, because that's something they can identify with.
All right, sure. Well, you know what we got to do here? We got to take one last break, and then we'll get into some final questions here for you.
All right.
That'll be it. Listen, I appreciate you talking about this too. This is really interesting. It is fascinating stuff.
All right.
We'll be right back. More Lighting the Void coming up. Henry Reed's here with us. Stay with us.
California Piscean, stuck in the Arizona desert. I'm a void walker, and I got the shoes to prove it. So what do I do when my soul yearns to delve deep into the realm of the unknown? I aim my satellite straight into the night sky and catch a smooth ride on the KTLK-DB radio waves. I tune into Lighting the Void with Joe Root on the French FM.
Joe, Lighting the Void is the best show on the planet. This is Barney, your friend from Facebook. Thank you and all the crew for all you do. Namaste, my friend.
This is Macon from the foothills of North Carolina, and I am a Void Walker.
G'day, Void Walkers. This is Lily from down under Australia. The world may be small, the enigma is greater. So let your curiosity take you for a journey with Joe Root.
Hey, this is V, coming in from Central Maryland, and I am a Void Walker.
This is Kevin Dougherty, a beginner Void Walker. I'm from Vancouver, BC. I know a little about a lot, and as Leonard Skinner said, I guess the rest. I learned a lot from Mr. Root and the show, and heard it from the beginning. I knew right then he was going to be a new Art Bell. Thanks for all your shows, and keep it up.
Hey, this is Derek from Mass, a.k.a. the Night Stalker, and I'm a Void Walker.
This is Mark from Chicago, and I walk the void to ascertain what is consciousness.
My name is Jared Johnson, and I'm from Humboldt County, California. I do not know all the answers to the questions about reality. I do not claim to know the ultimate truth about life. I seek that which has been made hidden as a part of a family of explorers of consciousness. I'm a Void Walker. Thanks, Joru.
This is Barbara Charlton from Metaphorical Archaeology. If you've ever had a traumatic paranormal experience, the effects of it may stay with you for years. Who do you talk to? You can't go to conventional help. What we do is we use emotional freedom techniques or tapping to actually neutralize the effects of that event. Maybe when you tell the story now, your heart races and your palms get sweaty. You don't even want to think about it because you don't know how to neutralize that. That's what EFT tapping does. It neutralizes those emotions. The circuit that was recorded on is gone. The energy flows freely and you're free of it. And that's what emotional freedom is all about. We offer this as a pro bono service, but this is something that I offer because no one, it seems, is helping people with these experiences. If you'd like to reach me, it's really easy. My cell phone is 214-995-3754. Please leave a message. I will get back to you as quickly as possible. Or you can email me, barb.eft@gmail.com. And EFT stands for Emotional Freedom Techniques. Reach out to me. It's confidential. This works. You won't believe the results.
Have you heard of heavy metals?
Yeah!
I'm not talking about the heavy metals in the junkyard. I'm talking about the heavy metals that build up in your body. Heavy metals in your body can make you feel sluggish, fatigued, and just plain off. Why not try Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com? Cleansing your body and making you feel great. Cleansing the inside of your body of intruders that sneak their way into you and set up an intruder camp. Life Change Tea helps remove unwanted intruder camps. Brew it, steep it, and drink in the results. Tastes great so you can create a new health habit. Our tea loves to help people. It just needs the chance. So order yours today by logging on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Our Life Change Super Strength Tea is waiting. This could be a beautiful relationship. Take charge of your health. Charge! Order at GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com.
The Fringe FM isn't just a radio station. We also provide services for all your audio production needs. If you're interested in live radio or pre-recorded podcasts, we're here to help. We even do audio enhancements and voiceovers if needed. If you want to do a podcast or live radio show and even want the option to syndicate on terrestrial radio, from simple audio file enhancement to live production and call screening, we have you covered. We have worked with some of the best professionals in the business in order to provide coaching instruction for content creation, show structure, and more. Contact The Fringe Digital Media for more at info@thefringe.fm. That's info@thefringe.fm. Or call 501-777-5631 for a consultation.
From the Kingdom of Arkansas, you are listening to Joe Root and Lighting the Void here on The Fringe FM.
guest tonight. We're talking about the intuition and the dream world. You can go to henryreed.com. Check out the website for reference while we're speaking tonight. And it's been a fascinating conversation learning to get in touch with the intuition. And thanks again for coming on the broadcast. This gets really cool. It's cool learning this stuff. I'm learning stuff. I don't know about you guys, but I am. So you hear a lot of people talk about keeping a dream diary. And I think now, after talking to you, that if we don't understand why, then we never really will understand why, because I'm starting to understand what you're saying is this is an ongoing relationship with your intuition that you have to pay attention to, work with, and try to increase, so to speak. Am I correct in saying that?
I would think so. In terms of where to apply your intuition, that seems to be the key thing. And at least with dreams, it gives you some content areas that you could start, you know, directing it toward. I wonder if the general audience about the problem of learning to trust it.
Yeah.
Because this is the age of being intuitive on purpose. People will say, you know, I know I have intuitions here and there, but how to be intuitive on purpose, intentionally, and then the fear of just getting in your own way. And what I have people do is turn their attention to their breathing and notice what they do when they turn their attention to their breathing, because it has a lot to teach them about intuition. I said, well, when I turned my attention to my breathing, I took a deep breath. I said, well, you see, we use the word inspiration as a word for intuition because we know from ancient times somehow a connection between breathing and spontaneous thoughts that express the nature within us. And so when I asked you to pay attention to your breathing, rather than paying attention to it, you started manipulating it because of a preconceived idea about how it should be.
Okay.
And that's what stands in the way of you and your intuition, is your preconceived ideas. You just won't let it come out. Now, one thing you can do if you want to turn it into a chore, is learn how to pay attention to your breathing and relax with every exhalation until you can allow the incoming breath to come on its own as inspiration. And then you're learning how to let go and let it come, because that's all intuition requires of you, is just to let it go and let it come. But we feel such a vacuum in that instruction. Well, how do I do that? What am I supposed to do? And so on. We just don't know how to do that. So it becomes a challenge to be intuitive intentionally. People can do it automatically, where they're sort of drawn to one person or repelled by another or so on. But, you know, say, ask intuition, where should I go today? Well, I'll meet a person who will have an important message for me. You know, when you sit quiet and see what comes to you, you know, as to some place you ought to go. I used to say, I don't know if they still have a TJ Maxx. I'd have a TJ Maxx attack. I'm driving down the interstate, and all of a sudden, I just know that in TJ Maxx, there's a shirt that I'm going to want.
That's my favorite store.
And so when I have that feeling, I'll go to TJ Maxx, walk in there, and I know that there's a shirt there that I'm going to want. And it never fails.
TJ Maxx or Marshalls? Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. Something like that. That used to be my joke about it. I live out, and there is no TJ Maxx around here now. But I know when the donkey needs to be moved, I'll just hit, and I'll go outside, and sure enough, I need to move the donkey.
So, speaking of which, once we learn to I don't know, tap into our intuition? Can we do other things like learn how to communicate with animals a little better? Because that seems tough for some people, and other people seem to get along with animals really well. And I believe that maybe the intuition, I'm asking you, though, because I don't know.
Oh, I've been studying that some, and I think it's true. And plants as well. One of the things that I was using to help people with these, to make them more normalized, is memories. To find yourself, what is it you're remembering? What's coming to mind? Like when we go and be with a plant, and the way we do that, you go to a plant, you don't know what it is, but be with it for a while and notice what things you find yourself thinking about, what's on your mind and so on. You write all that down, and then you go and find out the name of the plant and whatever its qualities, then you might discover that without realizing it, you were picking up on some of those qualities of the plant and the stuff that you were thinking about. And it's those kind of examples where people are responding to, you might call it, psychic information without being aware of it.
Interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting. Well, I think you...
The fellow known most for in terms of plants, a lot of this is going too with the heart. The heart, have a heart, heart connection and that sort of thing is starting to play a bigger role than the left brain, right brain kind of stuff. And this one fellow, I can't think of his name right now, but you sit and make a heart connection with the plant and notice the kinds of things you start thinking about and memories that come to you and so on as a way of tuning into the qualities that the plant has. I did the experiment. I went to poison ivy. And I went through the process with the breath and so on and getting into gratitude so that my heart would open and I'd make a heart connection with the poison ivy plant. And as I'm doing that, you know, I'm asking, you know, how can you be used? What's your gift to us? And all of a sudden I had this little daydream about Chef Boyardee. And he was cooking some raviolis, and he added some poison ivy for extra spice. So I went, after that, I went to the internet, Google, and looked up about, was there ever medicinal uses or whatever for poison ivy? And it was talking about at some point about a heat thing or something like that, as if at some point it had been suggested as a seasoning to add some kind of heat. And so that was an interesting kind of little experience. And that was just right out of, you know, what he was talking about.
Well, I got to say... this has been one of the most interesting conversations I've had in a long time. So, yeah, thank you for coming on the broadcast and talking to us and staying up late at night with us and talking about dreams.
Way past my bedtime, that's for sure. I'm sorry you had all the trouble with the technicalities and stuff.
That's the way the cookie crumbles. It's a live show. It happens. It's no problem.
Yeah.
No problem. But thank you again. And if you have any, like, book or anybody that wants to find you or find more of your work, where would you tell them to go?
Henryreed.com probably is the best website. I got a lot of free stuff that they can have to read and so on. And there's links there that they can ask for stuff.
Fantastic. Henryreed.com. You guys, this was cool. Thanks for coming out, Henry. It was good to talk to you.
Okay. All right, 99.
You have a good night, sir.
All right, 99.
Fascinating discussion, right? Like, I learned a lot tonight. I really did. Maybe we can keep this discussion going. I know tomorrow night we're going to talk about a little bit more stuff in the psychedelic realm, and then Thursday night's the birthday show. Stay tuned for the Secret Teachings with Ryan Gable. More broadcasting on the Fringe FM's coming up. If you're staying up late looking at this crazy moon, we'll see you guys. Have a good night. Sweet dreams.